You are listening live to the program.
Brought to you by Worth Harley-Davidson North, I-29 in Tiffany Springs. Why the hell not? You're worth it.
Your teams, your town, your program.
This is the anger and the frustration that's coming out now. When we watch George Floyd be choked out, this spirit broke in this country. It broke. It broke me because my 11-year-old son.
Okay, take a moment.
No, I got it, G.
Okay.
My son had to ask me, why didn't he get off of him?
You've got to be able to break the ice in those situations, because if you don't, and you're only having conversations with African Americans, especially in a moment like this, I really think that's the easy way out. I think it's important to listen and to educate yourself, but then you got to take that home. You know, I think real change happens at the dinner table. It happens at the barbershop. It happens at your place of worship. It doesn't just happen in tweets and conversations like this. You got to go beyond that and bring it home.
And now, Soren Petro.
Tough one today.
Yep.
Well, you know, usually there are times, there are moments when you've broadcast for some, you know, whatever it is, 25, 26 years, most of that here in Kansas City. There are times that situations and issues arise that you eventually, during the course of a show, will talk yourself into an emotional moment. This is a first. It's a first.
Marcus Spears,
I'm also reading a text from a friend of mine. It's a painful day in America. People are hurting. If you're not hurting, I think you need to look in the mirror and figure out why you're not. I don't think anybody could be real proud today about where we sit. Difficult times. It's a difficult time that began in March as the country began to make its way through a pandemic and continues to try to figure out what is the best way to save as many American lives as we can during this difficult time, and now head into a summer of where racial inequality in this country, economic inequality in this country continues to rear its head to the point that we have protests and at times rioting in our streets. And, you know, I've said many times here in this program that, you know, we are the place you go to get away from those kind of things. I can't. I have too many friends that are hurting. There's just too much to watch and comprehend. There's too many conversations to try to figure out how to have with my daughters. There's too many things to think about as to what needs to be done. I don't have it. I don't have the answer. I don't know where to go. Read you a text I got from a friend. Excuse me. It's a friend who told me a story during the Colin Kaepernick protests. I live a pretty sheltered life. Never tried to pretend to be anything more than what I am, whatever that is. You know, I didn't grow up with the, oh, I got to turn this into some referendum on myself because that's what I think happens too often in these times. You know, single mom, you know, with some tough economic times. You know, I joke around about them now like many people do who've come out the other side of it. You know, spaghetti and meatballs was spaghetti, can of tomato soup, and some hot dogs chopped up on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and tough times build character. I've heard that a lot, right? We say that a lot when it comes to the pandemic. Well, we get through this, we're all going to be stronger. But we're only going to be stronger if we learn from it, if we change, if we do better. Right? Oh, we're going to be stronger for it. Really? We have a pandemic and then somebody throws a party on Memorial Day weekend all over this country? I mean, is that how we're going to be better? Or are we going to be better because we kill off all of our senior citizens? Is that how we're going to be better? You know, that's great to say, but it takes action to mean it, right? It takes action to affect that change if you want to be greater, if you want to be better for it. Well, sitting around on your ass is not what's going to get it done. And I'm not telling you what should we do? I don't know. Not be a jackass. Let's start there. But, you know, I bring this up because we had many a show that dealt with the Colin Kaepernick situation. And I bring it up and because it is our time. And you're going to see it in the National Football League. I will tell you, I will be stunned if you don't see the kneeling back in a big, big way, if we have any football. I just want, you know, to share this. This is the text that I was looking at as we got started today. And, you know, I asked some friends, many friends, you know, what do you want to hear from me today? Right? What you just an idea. What's on people's minds? Right? They know what I do for a living, obviously. I'm a sports talk show host. So what do you want to hear from me today? What is my obligation here today? You know, I've got friends in this business that will tell you, and I respect them immensely. They're talented, bright people. And they said, well, you know, we have a platform. And I wouldn't be doing my social job, is the way it was pretty much put to me, if I didn't use my platform to express my opinions and point out the things that need to be changed in society. I've never done that much. Right? Not very much. There are times that obviously you get wound up, you get going. I do sometimes. And I struggle with that every day, you know, literally every day, every single day. I struggle with the idea, am I a guy that's just trying to milk the teat? You know, you talk your sports and you say it's because you want people to have a place to go where they don't have to think about issues. They don't have to think about politics and they don't have to think about their tough times. And you say that and it sounds good and people buy into it. And there's a lot of people that want that. But in reality, you're just a coward. You're just a coward that's not willing to go out there and take a stand and tell people this is what I believe in and this is what is important. And run the risk of losing a listener and run the risk of losing a sponsor and run the risk of losing your job. Are you just a coward because you don't have the same kind of spine, the same kind of backbone that this person does that says, no, I'm going to take this stand. And whenever it comes up, whenever I see fit, I'm going to use the platform that I have been given and earned in this industry for this person I'm talking about, who specifically I had this conversation with. And am I just a coward because I won't do the same thing? I haven't taken the platform and said, this is what needs to happen. I don't know. I still don't have the answers. I sit here today. I don't know. I wrestle with that every day. That's what I wrestle with. I do want to just talk about sports. I do want to be a sports talk show host. I don't want a political show. I don't aspire to doing news talk or doing political talk. I want to talk about sports. I have feelings. I have emotions. I have thoughts. I have ideas about my community, about my country, about my fellow mankind. And for the most part, I keep them to myself. All right. I just think that, okay, you know, you do your part by letting the people that know what they're talking about on that go have those discussions, and intelligent people, intelligent conversation will be had, and they will work through it. And in the meantime, when they need a break from it, you're there for them. It's been my philosophy. Again, I don't know that I'm right, but today I have to at least say a couple of things. So a friend of mine sent me this text when I asked him, what would you like to hear from me? What are you thinking? Anything. Point me in a direction. He said, you can't imagine some of the conversations that I've had with my son when he is an African-American gentleman. You can't imagine some of the conversations that I've had with my son. When he started high school, I sat him down and told him, welcome world? I sat him down. Second, I'm sorry. I sat him down and I told him, welcome. The world now sees. The world now sees you as an N-word. You can't allow them to define you. You can't slip up. You have to carry yourself differently than your peers. What I told him wasn't fair, but I had to get his attention. Every Friday and Saturday night, freshman through senior year of high school, he and I spent time at the gym. He thought we were there to just get ready and train for sports. It was my sneaky way of keeping him out of harm's way and away from some of what his friends were involved in. My wife and I talked often if we've done right by our kids in raising them in such an isolated bubble. I don't have that answer now. We will see what type of citizens we have created. Thank you for allowing me to share, and thanks for your friendship. We are hurting. I don't need others to bleed. Just acknowledge that we have pain. Well, I would go a step further. Not only should there be an acknowledging of the pain, you should feel it yourself. You should feel it yourself. And if you don't, you need to ask yourself why you don't. And you need to take a long look in the mirror. This is a painful day. A country that's already deeply wounded, already deeply hurting, already losing over 100,000 people to a virus is now embroiled in, again, protests and riots, the likes that unfortunately we've seen before. This one's bigger. And I've got news for you. If you're not hurting right now, if you're not feeling pain, and if this is something that's just 6 or 7 miles away from you, down on the plaza, 10 miles, 15 miles away from you, it's those people protesting. It's those people being arrested. It's those people that are down there. It's growing. All you need to do is see what happened. This started, didn't start, but the last chapter, at least, that we discussed in this program was Colin Kaepernick taking a knee. And the outrage, the response was not in a response to police brutality. It was not in response to African-American people, people of color being brutalized. The outrage was because a man decided to take a knee during the national anthem. That's where the bigger outrage was. The symbolism was more the outrage than the actual violence. What has been done since Colin Kaepernick threw away or dedicated or donated his career in an effort to draw attention to a cause? What has been done? What have you, whoever you are, listening to me right now, what have you done to make the world a better place? What have you done to address that situation? Here we sit. This is exactly what the man was protesting. Millions of people protested, boycotted radio stations, television stations, companies, sponsors. The NFL chose not to watch because they were not going to tolerate a man taking a knee during a national anthem. And here we sit today. If you're not affected now, you're going to be affected. Continue to turn a blind eye to this. If society continues to not address the situation that's there, if the focal point for you is about a store got broken into and not about what started the riot, believe me, there was no riot or protest scheduled for this week until George Floyd was killed, murdered, choked to death under the knee of a white police officer. There was going to be no protest. Focusing on whether or not stores should or shouldn't be broken into is a waste of time. It's a complete waste of time. You're missing the point. You're missing the issue. There is never a right way. Trevor Noah said a great piece on this. It's a protest. Those that are in power never like the way that the protest occurs because they're in power. They see nothing wrong to begin with. A protest, by its very nature, it's protesting what's going on. It's trying to draw attention, let you understand that there is a problem. You can either take the time to look at the situation, determine the problem, and then help be a part of the solution, or you can continue to turn a blind eye, and the protests will grow. What has to happen for real change to occur? Do the protesters have to arm themselves with assault rifles and circle state capitals? The Capitol building in Washington, D.C., the White House? What has to happen to truly get attention? What has to happen for people to say, look, we clearly got a problem? Like we went through this 4 years ago, nothing seems to have been addressed. I just watched him in. Think about the cavalier nature in which this occurred. Broad daylight. Two other officers holding the man down, and for upwards of 9 or 10 minutes, full body weight, knee on a man's throat, with people all around, cameras rolling. And if you think, well, you know, maybe he didn't see it, you know, the other officers who did nothing to stop it, you know, interesting reaction. Think about what happened just a week before on, I guess it was Memorial Day weekend, when a video came out. We didn't discuss this one, but probably should have. A woman named Amy Cooper walking her dog in Central Park. An African-American man walking through the park who apparently is an avid bird watcher. Likes to just go and watch the birds in Central Park. Woman had her dog off a leash. That's a law there. You're supposed to have your dog on a leash. Dog's running around, clearly. Apparently it was a new dog, as everybody's heard the story now unfold, or most people have. It's hopping around. You know, it's clearly not used to being on a leash. And the man who's trying to enjoy the park, walking around, looking at his bird, says, hey, that dog's supposed to be on a leash. And the woman begins to threaten the man with calling the police. Right, and this got spelled out. I give credit to Trevor Noah. He did a great job of spelling this out. Think about what that means. She said, I'm going to call the police on you. She says, yes, there's an African-American man. And she knew this is a white woman who works on Wall Street or somewhere around it in the financial industry, who someone told me they estimated the job that she either lost or has only been suspended from. I haven't heard the final details, and that's my fault for not caring enough to look into it. I should know what actually ended up happening. But a job that was estimated at $500,000 a year. That's the kind of economic world she lives in. And she called the police on a man who simply asked her to obey the law. Put your dog on a leash. And to think about it, that the mindset of this woman and many in America, and maybe you who I'm talking to right now, maybe someone you know, the mindset is, I heard something I didn't want to hear. My dog, my new dog, is a handful, and I don't want to abide by the law, so I'm going to just take the easy route, let the dog run around. When called upon the fact that I'm not obeying the law, I understand that not only does racism exist, but I can use it. I can wield it as a sword, as a weapon. I can call the police. I can say an African-American man is here, and I'm a white woman, and they are going to come running. They are going to come running, and this guy is going to feel some pain. Some way, shape, or form, whether it's just the pain of being detained for a while, having to answer questions, taking the time to get his phone out, which the man wisely shot video of what was going on, and he was clearly doing nothing. And you know, if you think that, well, that's an isolated situation, then why did I have a friend send me a video exactly like that? That occurred when a real estate agent did the same thing. Told an African-American man, did you just touch me? I'm calling the police. I saw the video. That's not an isolated incident. That is a society that has been created that has white people understanding the view and relationship between African Americans and the police of this country and knowing that it can be wielded and used to bring harm or hurt to an African American person. That's racism, people. That's what it is. It's not just burning crosses. It's not lynchings, okay? It is, but it's not just, okay? That is racism. There is a problem in this country, and it has to be addressed. And if you don't feel the pain, you will. You will at some point. You will, because at some point, what will happen? The marches that are ineffective here will grow. They'll go to different places. Do they have to march through Briarcliff, Mission Hills, Leawood? I'll bet if they do, the opinions will change. You know, it is amazing to me, and we said this several weeks ago. Again, one of the times we did tiptoe towards the things that aren't sports on this program. I watched in absolute amazement where people took assault rifles towards our state capitals, and nothing was done. Nothing was done. Now protests, which are largely African American, and certainly for our people of color in this country's behalf, on their behalf, and immediately there's riot gear and batons and tear gas and rubber bullets. What's the difference between the two? From what I've seen largely, although I have seen a protest where I saw assault rifles, but largely you're talking about unarmed people that are met with riot police and the National Guard and a government and a president that's calling not for unity, not for healing, not for peace, not for work towards finding a solution, but for division and violence. The protests will grow. They will grow as long as the conditions stay the way they are. As long as they are the same, they will grow. Because when you get to a point that you feel like you have nothing to lose, what does it matter? If you get to a point to where you fear coming out of your house, or you fear your son being out on a Friday and Saturday night, what do you have to lose by standing in protest? What do you have to lose when standing in protest and the anger gets the better of you and lashing out and doing damage to things? What's going to happen? If your conditions at home are such that you feel like there's no way out, where are you going to turn? There's an economic imbalance. There is an issue. There is a problem. Make no mistake about it, people. There is a problem. This is not just a nuisance, okay? There are issues that are boiling in this country. They have been boiling for several years, really forever in this country, as we've never gotten to equality. We reach certain spots and we feel like, okay, now we're here. Oh, it's all good now. It's not all good now. It's not all good now. Ask your fellow American citizens. If you preach the flag and loving the flag and loving America, these are Americans. What we fight for are each other. What our military stands guard for is each other. There's nothing worth guarding. At some point, there's nothing worth guarding. I don't have all the right words. It's not my realm, but it's a painful day in America. It's a painful day. It's really sucks. Okay? And however much it sucks for me, you know, it sucks worse for a lot of my friends. But I can't just sit here and say, no, I'm not going to talk about it. Not today. Not today, I can't. We will shift gears. I got a couple other things I want to play for you. I want you to hear some of the reaction, and I'd like you to hear some wise individuals who spoke many years ago and see if any of it rings home with you. We will eventually get back to the program. We will decompress and play the feud in the 3 o'clock hour with Todd Lebo. That will come your way. We'll talk college football with Ben Kercheval, name, image, and likeness as well with Ben Kercheval. We'll talk Chiefs football with Seth Kaiser in the 5 o'clock hour. But we open today with what is toughest day for me as a broadcaster. This is it. This is number one. We'll take a break.
The Program with Seren Petro.
I do have better command of the language and nuances and inflections than you.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're listening to the Program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Seren Petro, Curtis Siebel, Jed Marshall with you here in the program. Going to give you some historic words to listen to here in a couple of minutes, and some of the stuff that's being said by some folks in sports here today coming up. 913-3810-810. You can join the conversation if you would like. 913-3810-810. You can hit me up on Twitter at Seren Petro, SorenPetro. We're going to go to Jim in a second, but Curtis, I know you had a couple of thoughts you wanted to add into the mix.
Just, you know, you talked about some of the things we've seen and examples we've seen on the internet, and we've heard from friends, and I just wonder how many others. I mean, you see a video of someone trying to enter their apartment, someone in a policeman's uniform walking from his car in his building and asked to prove to me who you are. And you wonder how many other times this has happened. A J.B. Hunt driver in a truck with a uniform blocked by two men in a gated community because they didn't think he should be there. And how many times does this happen every single day? How many times did it happen before the advent of phones? How many of these things are littered through our history? And the constant weight of that and what that does to someone's soul.
Yeah.
And to have to deal with that every single day, regardless of where you came from, regardless of where you're going, that is always, always on you. And I want to be positive because, as a friend told me last night, without a ray of hope, what do we have? It's tough to be positive. Because I think it's... We talked about Kaepernick sitting and LeBron James wearing T-shirts and the protests. It clearly isn't the vehicle by which this message is being communicated. It's the message. There are some people in this country who just don't want to hear it. And how do you get them to hear it? How do you get them to understand what is happening when they won't even listen to what's being said?
Yeah, and that's why I say these protests will grow. I mean, because there is no choice. When you, and we're going to play it here in a second. We're going to hear some words I think speak to today very eloquently. Let's hear Jim first. Jim, you're in the program. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, Seren, thank you for taking my call. My hat is off. I'm on my feet. I'm giving you a standing ovation, my friend. That is the best, bravest monologue I have ever heard you deliver. Thank you for doing that. We needed it.
Thank you. Hey, I appreciate that.
And Seren, I'll just two quick points and I'm gone. You probably made some people mad, and I'm going to talk to them for just a minute. If you're mad at Seren for saying what he said, and if you're more mad about protests than you are about a dead George Floyd, go talk to someone you know and trust who's a person of color. I have a friend who raised two boys. His boys are 21 and 23, African-American men now. He couldn't let them go out on homecoming night to teepee with the rest of the school. He goes, we live in an all-white neighborhood. I can't let my boys go run through the backyards. You know, because you know how the homecoming tradition, you kind of
go,
the home. He goes, and he told me that about 6 years ago, and it really struck home for me. And I'm not, you know, I don't agree with every single thing you said in your monologue, but your monologue was human. And so I would say this to your listeners. If you're mad at Seren for saying what he said, go talk to somebody of color and get a little bit of their perspective. Because the words from my friend changed my total viewpoint on this when I started thinking about what his boys cannot participate in a 100-year-old homecoming tradition because he lives in an all-white neighborhood and he's worried about one of them getting shot. Go talk to one of your African-American friends and get some of their perspective if you're mad at Seren. Have a great day. My hat's off. All the love. Good job, Seren.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate that and appreciate the kind words. And, you know, your experience reminds me of during the Colin Kaepernick stuff. And it was a real eye-opener to me as well when you say go ask somebody. And I asked my friend, I said, well, listen, you live out here, out south, Overland Park, right? There's never any problems. He goes, what are you talking about? And I said, well, I mean, do you experience, any kind of racism living out here? He said, I walked down 143rd Street, and one out of five times a carload of people will yell the N-word out the window at me. I said, what? About one out of five. It said, in fact, I won't take that route with my wife. I won't subject her to that. I won't let her walk with me when I walk up there. And that was, you know, whatever, 3-4 years ago, 5 years ago, I don't know what year it was when that was all going on. And that was an eye-opener. I'm like, well, okay, but that happens over there, right? Not in my world. I live in a world where, yeah, it's pretty white. Whiter than I'd like it to be, frankly. Right? But still, that's not happening here. And no, that's my world. That's my world. That's what's going on. Yeah, I mean, there are issues and there are changes, and this is my, you know, I think the bigger issue for all of us that we have to contribute, and whether the only way you can think to contribute is by how you choose to use your vote. And I'm not telling you to vote one party or the other. Both of them drive me crazy. I think they're both lost. But you do have to vote, right? I do think you gotta, even if it's for a lesser of two evils in your mind. What's frustrating to me is, as a country, this is, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the economics, but just to give you an example of where things haven't changed, we had the mortgage and loan crisis in 2008, where the government had to bail out all the companies, and we fast forward 12 years later, and nothing changed. You know what changed? The government figured it out that, like, oh, no, we got to do it, and we got to do it even quicker, which it theoretically meant we were even more screwed now than we were 12 years ago. So the bailouts, which everybody bitched and moaned, both parties fired shots back and forth at each other about, you know, how it was done, who did it, who's responsible for it, the way it was done, and nobody addressed the actual problem. And 12 years later, the banks owe everything and corporations need money 2 weeks into a pandemic. They're 2 weeks away from failing. Every corporation in this country is 2 weeks away from failing, or many of them. A month away. Don't get caught in the minutia. And this is no different when it comes to our own citizens, our own people, our own human beings. This issue was raised and pointed out, and it has not changed. And that's what I point out, the thank God for cell phones now. If you're African American in this country, you know, you need to have a body cam on you at all times. You need to be able to document what's going on. I mean, and I won't send out the video. I've got it sitting on my phone of almost the exact same situation where a white person is using the threat of calling the cops, knowing full well what that means. You're black, I'm white, cops come, you're screwed. There will be none. That is think about that. I mean, that's a staggering thing to realize is a reality in this country. And the fact that it's not just, well, that Amy Cooper lost her job, so it's all taken care of. No, it's not. It's the fact that white, black goes to jail. What happened here? Doesn't matter, black goes to jail. I know it. I'm calling the police on you. I mean, that should just have you absolutely beside yourself. Jed, I want to speak to this. Let's Curtis, which one first? We'll do the second one in the next segment.
Are we talking about 6 and 7?
Yeah.
Which
one? Which order? You've listened to them more.
Let's go 6.
Okay. April 14th, 1967, Stanford University. Okay, I'm thinking about that. We're talking about 53 years ago. Dr. Martin Luther King. We've given a day for Dr. King, and we know the great work that he did. But tell me that this speech couldn't be delivered this afternoon. This is Reverend King during a speech at Stanford University. Like I said, April 14th, 1967.
I'm still convinced that nonviolence is the most potent weapon available to oppress people in their struggle for freedom and justice. I feel that violence will only create more social problems than they will solve. That in a real sense it is impractical for the Negro to even think of mounting a violent revolution in the United States. So I will continue to condemn riots and continue to say to my brothers and sisters that this is not the way. Continue to affirm that there is another way. But at the same time, it is as necessary for me to be as vigorous in condemning the conditions which cause persons to feel that they must engage in riotous activities as it is for me to condemn riots. I think America must see that riots do not develop out of thin air. Certain conditions continue to exist in our society, which must be condemned as vigorously as we condemn riots. But in the final analysis, a riot is the language of the unheard. And what is it that America has failed to hear? It has failed to hear that the plight of the Negro poor has worsened over the last few years. It has failed to hear that the promises of freedom and justice have not been met. And it has failed to hear that large segments of white society are more concerned about tranquility and the status quo than about justice, equality, and humanity. And so in a real sense, our nation's summers of riots are caused by our nation's winters of delay. And as long as America postpones justice, we stand in the position of having these recurrences of violence and riots over and over again. Social justice and progress are the absolute guarantors of riot prevention.
Social justice and progress are the absolute guarantors of riot prevention. Earlier, Dr. King said, in the final analysis, a riot is the language of the unheard. And what is it that America has failed to hear? Do that speech in 15 minutes, and it seems to fit, doesn't it?
Yeah. And it's not just what is it failed to hear. It's what is it chosen, in many instances, what is it chosen not to hear?
Yeah.
It goes beyond that. It's one thing to not hear something, but just to just not want to hear it and to build your wall higher does not help.
Yeah. Yeah. 913-810-810. We'll take a break. One more I want you to hear when we come back. You're in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
I know he means well, but he is quite possibly the foulest man I have ever met.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Coming up in our next hour, we will shift gears. This hour dedicated to a painful day, without a doubt the most difficult day for me as a broadcaster. You have tough days. You think you have tough days. No, I'll tell you what tough days are. We're in them right now, America. This is it. These are tough days. And how we all carry ourselves and lead our lives and the decisions we make and the choices we make and how we do or don't help our fellow man. That's what's going to determine where we go as a community here, Kansas City, a country, the United States. I'm tired of hearing people say, well, we'll be stronger for it. And then just, you know, head on over to their, you know, cush setup and just wait for what? Time to pass for somebody else to, you know, fix all the problems. These are problems that exist in today. And I hope we will be better as a nation. I hope we will. I don't think we're better today than we were during the Colin Kaepernick protests.
People love bumper stickers. It's time to get past that.
Yeah. I want you to hear President Kennedy. This is President John Kennedy from the White House on March 13th, 1962. He had a program, if you will, Alliance for Progress, right? This came on the one-year anniversary of that being initiated in 1961, and it was to, quote, build a hemisphere where all men can hope for a suitable standard of living and live out their lives in dignity and freedom. This was about other countries really around the North American continent, right? But I think it clearly speaks to today. If you hear what it is, this is President Kennedy on March 13th, 1962.
For too long, my country, the wealthiest nation in a continent which is not wealthy, failed to carry out its full responsibilities to its sister republics. We have now accepted that responsibility. In the same way, those who possess wealth and power in poor nations must accept their own responsibilities. They must lead the fight for those basic reforms which alone can preserve the fabric of their societies. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable.
Those who make peaceful, I want to quote this directly. I want to make sure I don't screw it up. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable.
Yeah.
I mean, is there a better way to put when I watch on television, a journalist who's standing where, based upon the exchange that I saw live on television, standing where he was told to stand, and police in riot gear come around him and then arrest him when he says, okay, where do you want me to go? Where do you want us to stand? We'll stand wherever you want. Where do you want us to stand? And no answer is ever given, and the man is put under arrest. He's released an hour later after the head of CNN sends the video and says, what the hell is this? And he's quickly released. And I had somebody, and I said, this guy, Omar Jimenez, who did his job in a peaceful manner, didn't exacerbate the situation, just was being arrested. And I'm not saying that's the right way to go. I'm just telling you what he did. But he was arrested for no reason, clearly, because he was released an hour later. And there are videos out there of other people that are peacefully protesting and are being taken into custody and arrested. When you make peaceful protest impossible, riots are inevitable.
Which speaks to the initial Colin Kaepernick. That was, he tried to make a peaceful protest. He wasn't allowed to.
He lost his job over it.
Yes. He was told this isn't the right platform.
I just think that if you thought that the Colin Kaepernick and what he was protesting about and what he was talking about and what that was all about was over there, that's over there. That's not in my neighborhood. And if you thought, not only is it over there, but I'm not watching it on my TV, you're putting it on my TV, I refuse to watch your league because it's on my TV. So because I don't want it. I'm closing my eyes to it. I don't want to see it. And not only do I not want to see it, I can't even turn my head. I will shun your entire league. And a league of our most powerful, a rich nation, our nation, John F. Kennedy said, in talking about helping out other nations in North America, we will no longer turn a blind eye. We will be there. We've gotten to a point that we turn a blind eye to our own people. And I will say this, the powerful, that's our government elected officials. Those are our civic leaders, the rich, the powerful. You you cannot be turning your back on what's going on. You've gained so much from this society. You have an obligation to help all of society. And you need to look around. Or eventually all of the businesses, all of the things that have made you powerful will begin to suffer. You should do it for the right reason. It's your fellow man. It's your countryman. It's an American. If you don't do the right thing, then riots are inevitable.
Time for our Deli Fresh end of the hour question. Sponsored by Good Sense. Chosen by KC sandwich lovers for 30 years. Good Sense, not because it's easy, but because it's better.
All right, born on this date, Alan Ameche. He scored the NFL's first postseason overtime touchdown. Who scored the second? Brought to you by Good Sense.